Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast Supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give and there's no regular commitment. Just hit the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Phil Tiger. Slacker Podcast.
Hi Slackers, hope you're all good. My God, you're so radiant today. You're glowing. You're absolutely glowing. As are we at the Slacker Podcast. It's the Royal We. I don't know why I like talk about the podcast. I do this all the time. Where I'm like, us here at the Slacker Podcast. The Slacker Podcast. I'm literally the CEO and the chimney sweep. I am the bottom and the top of the organization. But I counted today, right? I was like, we have released so many podcasts this year, like more than I think we've ever done before. We are, what, we're not even, we're halfway through September and we've done 27 podcasts this year, including the new Slacker Friends podcasts that are going up on the podcast platforms and on the YouTube, the Slacker Phil YouTube channel as well, which I'm putting clips off the normal podcast up there too. And just trying loads of different things out. I'm really proud of where the Slacker Podcast is in comparison to maybe where it was a year ago. Loads of exclusive stuff that we're putting up on the Patreon for the Slacker Podcast as well. We've leveled up the content there big time. Guests have got bigger. We've gone weekly. And to help sustain that amount of content and help it level up more and sort of like put your own little stamp on it and become part of the Slacker community, you can go to patreon.com/slackerpodcast and you can go and you can support your favorite content for $2 a month. What's that, like £1.50? Like, I don't even know what you can buy for £1.50. I bought like a Twix yesterday and it was like £1.10. So like for the price of a Twix a month, there you go. So yeah, I put a couple of playlists, some extra fun bonus stuff up there, loads of questions, lots of community chat and things that happen on the Slacker Patreon. So big up to that. This week's podcast is from three sisters from LA, and we recorded this back in June. I think it was like 2 days after my birthday, and we just had such a good time talking. Like I love the sisters from Haim at the best of times, but they were such a real like dart through the darkness of the middle of lockdown, and you'll just hear that through the conversation. Like it's a good long one. I've actually edited this down. This was really like probably one of the longest podcasts that we've ever done to this date. So I'm gonna play this in right now because you can probably hear my dog barking in the background. So I'm gonna go and tend to little Rebel the dog. This is the Slacker Podcast with Haim in 3, 2, 1. We got Esty, we got Danya, we got Alana, we got Haim. Haim time.
Hey, Haim time. Haim time.
It is Haim time on the Slacker Podcast. And yeah, we've got he's all. How he's doing? He's well?
Good. You know.
What time is it for you?
Taking it day by day.
It's 6:10 on Friday evening. Like, this is like the last non-alcoholic drink that I will have today.
I was gonna ask you what's in your cup, Billy.
Yeah, what are you drinking?
I'm drinking a cup of tea.
Me too. PG tips.
Is it proper tea? Because I saw, did you see that video going around of like this American woman like teaching people how to make hot tea? Oh. And she just pours a load of milk and puts a tea bag into the milk and puts it in the microwave. And everybody over here has lost their shit going, what are you doing? What are you actually doing? That is not how you make tea. Like, that's an affront.
Instead of water, she just used milk?
Yeah, I don't know.
In a microwave?
I'm Irish. Like, it was an affront to my heritage.
Oh, my God.
Honestly, I will wear that. We don't know how to make tea.
I'm not going to explain how I make tea because I feel like I'm gonna say something wrong.
But it's fine. I'm like Irish, or like we have like 9-10 cups of tea a day. Your granny will go like, go make a cup of tea, this, that, and the other. It's in our heritage. It's not, but like, you know, I wouldn't teach you how to make chicken soup. Do you know what I mean? Like you guys know how to do that better than anybody.
You probably could. You probably could.
Have you been cooking a lot during this time?
I started off really good and I was like losing loads of weight and cooking really well and exercising. And the more I got used to it, the more I've fallen into my old ways again. What about you guys?
Yeah, I feel you.
I'm like an awful cook. I'm really bad at cooking. Like, I am just, I don't know how to do anything. I've been only eating like, and I also like, I eat cereal in a red Solo cup because I don't like doing dishes. And I have like,
that's such.
Yeah. Alana's a college student. Alana's like literally like an 18-year-old college boy.
This is like my uni years. Like my first year at uni is like I only eat like cereal out of a cup. I eat grilled cheese. I eat quesadillas, and like that's it's a wonder that my body hasn't collapsed on itself.
That is some strong.
I had a vegetable. I had a vegetable for 4 months.
That's some strong divorced dad energy that you've got going on there. are you guys together, or are you apart? Are you allowed to see each other? Do you miss each other? What's going on?
I feel like people are shocked when they find out that we're not,
you've got independent lives.
We don't live together in like bunk beds, like a three-pronged bunk bed. Like, I don't go to sleep and go like, night guys. Like, no, we don't.
No.
I'm 28 years old. I need to have my own.
Yeah, this isn't like the Royal Tenenbaums, you know.
But is this must be the longest that you've gone without seeing each other, right?
Yeah, I mean, we came home. We played Jimmy Fallon in New York in March, right before quarantine happened. We didn't really know. I mean, we were like everybody else, and we didn't know what was going to happen. And the next, you know, there was like talk of quarantine. No one knew. We were like, is that really going to happen? We don't know. So we went to New York. And then I think we were about to go on this deli tour, which was like so exciting. Like playing in delis is like two worlds that like we never thought we could combine, and then we combined them, and it was honestly
we take to it like a fish to water.
Mm.
So we played like
Chaim and delis are synonymous at this point. Yeah.
And so we played a deli in New York, and then we went to DC and played a bagel shop. And then literally that night it was like quarantine is happening, and we were all the way in DC, and it was like, and New York is like, there's like so many cases in New York, and we were like, oh my gosh. And Essie's a type 1 diabetic. So like all these reports were coming out as like type 1 diabetics are like them, like keep them in a plastic bubble.
Yeah, like let's protect them at all like costs.
Bubble boy, bubble boy status, like keep them in keep a type 1 diabetic in a plastic bubble.
I looked up plastic bubbles on Amazon the second I got home.
You should have. You could probably buy one of Wayne Coyne from Flamin' Lips. He's probably got loads.
I know. Like they're like in a storage unit somewhere, like in Nashville or something. Yeah. I looked into it though. Honestly, I was like, is this my life now?
You're the girl in the bubble. Like that must have been a nervy flight back to LA.
It was terrifying. Also, it was like there wasn't like studies saying like you should wear masks yet. It wasn't even a thing. Like people weren't wearing. No one was wearing masks. And so we came home and we were like immediately like we all need to go into our separate houses and not see each other. So we didn't see each other for like a month and a half. We were like really crazy.
First day of quarantine was my birthday.
Yeah, Essie's birthday was the first day of quarantine.
Like Alana said, every news report that was coming out, it was like, if you're a type 1 diabetic, you're fucked. And like,
sorry, can we swear? Because we've you had can a
swear,
bad.
You can swear as much as you
we've
want.
We had a bad history with you swearing.
That's so, right.
Sorry.
Yeah, the first time I was on Radio 1, the first week, the lovely people from Haim swore and got me into shit. And then Sam Wolfson, who was the journalist, wrote it up in The Guardian and called me flustered Radio 1 DJ Phil Taggart. And then I ended up living with Sam like about a year later. I was living with him and I was like, Sam, do you remember me writing that? And he was just like, yeah, so what? I'd do it again. I was like, all right, fair enough. Fair play. No, you can swear as much as you want. Like I'm the boss of this one. I can't fire myself. There's nobody else to do the job.
Okay, just making sure. I really don't want to get you in trouble again.
No. Really.
We're like the biggest sketch comedy fans, but I don't know if SNL isn't showed in the UK, right?
It you can get it. Like I think like I've got a love hate relationship with it. Like there's certain eras of it that I really like, and there's certain eras of it that I'm not mad into. But when it's funny, it's unbeatable. But when it's like lame, you're just like, I mean, sketch comedy by its very definition is like 50-50. Like you'll like half of them, you'll not like half of them.
Well, sure. Our favorite era, I mean, we again also do have eras of SNL that we love. Like our favorite, I think I always go back to there. I always love like Gilda Radner, like.
That's like my favorite era.
But like my full favorite era is like Maya Rudolph, Molly Shannon, Sherry O'Terry, Anna Gasteyer, like the
queens.
Were like the queens of sketch comedy were on SNL. Like it doesn't
kills me.
I've been going down a rabbit hole of watching Maya Rudolph play Beyonce. And it's the funniest. I like fly and like Donatella Versace.
Yeah.
Like, it's so funny. It's just so hilarious.
So spot on. She's so fucking funny.
I missed out on so much, so many like amazing comedy movies because like I was like such a boy as like, you know, growing up. I, like when like Mean Girls came out, I was like, I'm not watching that. That's a chick flick. Screw that. And I watched it like again for the second. Yeah, I know, but this is just me being a young dick.
Great.
I know, but I was just like a typical sort of, oh, I'm not watching that rom-com because I hate rom-coms, right? But I thought, oh, it's just going to be a rom-com. And I watched it like 2 weeks ago, and I think it's probably the most I've laughed at any movie in forever. Like there's a bit in it when like they're in the girls' bathrooms and the guys in there as well, and they're chatting and the woman goes, hey, get out of here, and the big guy's like, oh my god, it's Danny DeVito, I love your work, and just chases her out of the toilet. I was in stitches laughing at that for ages.
Tina Fey, another queen of sketch comedy from SNL. Like, she's so funny. I mean, like all these women that were so fucking hilarious. I mean, and really growing up, like they actually made me feel like it was like cool to be the funny girl because I was always the funny girl growing up, like trying to make people laugh. And they like made me feel like it was like cool to do that. Like you're not the weird girl that's trying to make people laugh and like falling for no reason to make people laugh.
Do you
we love pratfalls in this family. I think pratfalls are really fucking funny. It doesn't take a lot to make us laugh.
Have you ever like written or performed stuff like that? I mean, you're all pretty creative like that anyway. Like have you ever like thought about doing that, like maybe writing your own stuff?
I'm too nervous. The thing is like for my friends, like me being funny in front of like friends is like just fun, but like the thought of like I don't know how stand-up comedians do it. Like,
no, I couldn't do it. I couldn't do that.
How, like, you have, it's just I don't know how to do that.
I did do improv theater. Well, first of all, I'm a theater kid. Like I'm fully like embrace my inner and outer theater kid.
Full on jazz hands, are we talking here?
All of it. Mm. I mean, I think growing up, I just wanted attention, and I still want attention.
I hear you.
I think that I found that the people that, you know, I found people that were like me that like loved musicals and loved like, you know, movies and theater. And from like a really young age, I remember just wanting to like have a spotlight on me and perform. That's never really stopped.
It's kind of worked out pretty good for you, I think, like in that regard.
Why do you think Danielle's so quiet?
Yeah, because I literally like anytime Danielle got any attention, I was so upset.
Typical sister shit.
I like there's like home videos of my dad, like, you know, like at, you know, dance recitals or whatever, or even just like day in the life of like Danielle and SD Haim at like 3 and 6. And my dad going to me and like being like, how old are you? What year is it? And me saying it. And then going to Danielle and asking her and me literally going, I'm not finished yet.
I mean, what can you add to that? And the the president is X, Y, and Z. Do you know what I mean? Like,
I couldn't handle Danielle getting any attention. And then on top of that, there's also an infamous Haim family video where it's the day that Alana was born. And at the hospital, there's like a window, like in the maternity ward, there's a like a window where like you can see the mother and the baby and like you without going inside. And me and Danielle are like peeking over. There's like a bench, like we're peeking over into the window and like whispering to each other and giggling, like laughing, like two like little scheming like children. And my dad is like, "What are you laughing about? What's so funny?" And I like deadpan to the camera, and I was like, "I just told Danielle that shit's about to change." And my dad, all you see is my dad like dropping the camera and being like, and like yelling at me like that I can't say shit at 6 years old. Like, where are you hearing these words from? And of course I was like, I hear them from you.
From MTV.
I hear them from MTV. I hear them from you.
Has that relationship kept going? Like, I mean, like when it comes to like creating now, is there like power struggles in the rehearsal room?
Not really. I mean, look, again, we're not the Partridge Family. We do fight. Like, I'm not like, we're not like a family sitcom. We do fight. We're also sisters. Like, we're just your, if you have do you have a sibling?
I've got a younger sister and she, yeah, like we used to fight like, yeah, so much. Fight.
Kids
love each other.
Yeah.
But honestly, I really, it's fucking sounds so cheesy, but I will say that like when it comes to music, we really don't, we don't bicker that much when it comes to music because we have the same, we have the same brain or ears.
You have the same DNA.
Everything like... else, but we have the same DNA. But honestly, like other shit, like, I mean, when you're on like a tour bus for a year, you're in such close quarters, you're bound to have a couple meltdowns of like.
I've played in bands before. Like, I mean, I played 10 years in a band, right? And like those guys are my brothers and they were the best men at my wedding and things like that. Oh. But I mean, like, we did short tours and we never did like anything too long because there was an underwhelming lack of interest. And we used to kick the shit out of each other. Like, I mean, like quite literally, we would get so fed up with each other that we would stop and just start punching each other in the face. But that was kind of like, that was fine because afterwards we were like, ah, my God.
Yeah, you get it out and that's healthy. I mean, we were never like physical fighters. It was more just like with our words.
Yeah.
Also, I think, like growing up, I think our parents did a really good job of like teaching us like, listen, when Esty's in a mood, like let her chill.
Yeah.
Like, but also like me and Danielle had to be nice to Esty because I mean, for this is one reason, this is not the only reason why we had to be nice to Esty, but Esty turned 16 and got her license and we needed to fucking get her to drive us places.
Oh, yeah. They weren't nice to me. I wasn't, you know, gonna take them out.
Yeah.
You know? So I took them out of the valley for a minute. The good news is that by that time, like around, I think there was like a shift right around the time that I got my license and I would, you know, I'd get to take the family car and drive out of the valley and go see live music. And I think that's also, to Alana's point, why we don't really argue when it comes to like the music, because we grew up listening to the same shit and thinking that the same shit was cool.
And a lot of that comes from like cruising in a car. Like, I think that's probably one of the best places to listen to music and connect together. Really.
Oh yeah. And growing up in LA, that was kind of our, you know, like the proximity of the valley to places like Silver Lake and, you know, the Hollywood Strip, it's not that far proximity wise. But I think growing up in the valley, it feels like it's eons and like eons away. Like it's so far away. But it's not.
I've always kind of wondered about like growing up in LA, and you guys grew up in San Fernando. We're all roughly about the same age. And I was always thinking like, you know, it must be like the OC. Like your life must be like the OC. I come from such a like a rural part of Ireland, which is disconnected to pretty much the whole world. So anybody that was born in LA automatically had like massively rich parents, and they all lived in mansions, and that they were all like screwing each other's friends and girlfriends. Really, it was like Dawson's Creek meets the OC.
OC stands for Orange County, which is like, what, 2 hours away from where we live?
But I just thought like that American teenagers, that was their life. Because that was what was fed into me. Like when you watched like American Pie and Scream and Home Alone and things like that, right? They all of their houses are like double mansions with like, you're like going, who are these people? What do their parents do?
That was not our upbringing. We watched those same movies and we're like, oh my God, like, where is that? Like, who are these people? We grew up in like Sanford. I'm trying to think what like the equivalent would be. Like the San Fernando Valley is like,
it's a suburb.
It's a burb. It's like, you know.
Also, to be fair, like all the fucking high school parties that were on the OC, like where the fuck, who was getting them all that alcohol?
Like that doesn't, no, that like doesn't.
The first like fucking 5 hours of my night in high school was trying to figure out how to get like one beer. Like, I don't understand how they have like kegs of beer. Like, I was always like, who is getting them all this alcohol? I have no idea. Like, we were lucky if I had like a shot glass of vodka for like 17 people. But, like, everyone take like a little dropper and like put it on your tongue because you only have one shot of vodka. Like, there was no way. I was always like, I mean, the OC came out when I was right about like, I think it was before, I think I was in middle school. So I think it was like before I went to high school, and I was like, whoa, high school seems.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey there, it's Michelle Norris. I'm host of a podcast called Your Mama's Kitchen. When I travel, I'm usually looking for a way to find a taste of home when I'm not at home. And one of the things I love to do when I am at home is entertain. And Airbnb allows me to do that. When I was in California recently, I rented a house that had a great kitchen. And when we were sitting around the table, we're all thinking, we're in someone else's house. Someone could be in all of our homes as well. If you have a home, but you're not always at home, you have an Airbnb. Your home might be worth more than you think. Find out how much at airbnb.com/host.
So tight. And then you get to high school and you're like, this is, I have no idea. Like, what? How is this even happening? What? How does everyone have enough money to get red Solo cups?
Like, definitely not at our high school.
No.
We went to a public. Do you know the movie Fame?
Yeah. One of my favorites.
Oh, really?
No.
Incredible stuff.
Not really, but I know what it's about.
I was like, oh, okay.
I grew up watching that movie, and that's what I thought. I was like, that's what I want my high school experience to be, right? Some of the plot lines, not so much, but I was like,
wanted to walk down the halls of her high school and be like, she can sing and dance.
And I found it. I found the sister school of La LaGuardia School in LA, and you had to audition. Like, it was 100% on merit. And I auditioned for the theater department, and I got in. And I think everyone in my family was like, there's no way this bitch is going to get in. And then once I got in, I was like, well, looks like this is where I'm going to school.
Yeah.
And then me and
Danielle just wanted a copy, Essie, but we were in the music department. We weren't in the theater department.
Danielle and I were in the music department. So our party, like, we didn't have time even really. Like, the only time we had, like, time to party was, like, a cast party.
Like a rap party.
Yeah, from like a show that we did. Like, those were the only, you know, we didn't have sports teams at our school. There was no cheerleaders. Yes. There was no, like, it was literally like I took dance class for physical education, which was amazing.
I was super
jazz hands.
In our school, it was quite jockey and it was quite like sports, like everything in my school was sports.
We had none of that.
But not to call out
my high school. I think there was like the one thing that we had was like someone tried to make an ultimate frisbee team my year. There was a group of people that like really wanted to start like an ultimate frisbee league. And I think that lasted like 10 minutes.
So yeah.
Like,
sorry guys, there's a bass solo happening over there. I'm just going to go over and watch it.
Or like
someone's having a ultimate frisbee game.
Yeah. Guys, go on and come into my club. You can't come in. Stay there. And he's like, oh, no, I can't. but it's...
Can't really mime over a podcast.
Yeah. But everybody who, like, you know, a lot of people will ask you, going like, you know, your parents are into music and you must have taken them after them like that. But you're talking about how not into sport you were, but your dad was like a proper pro footballer.
His biggest disappointment was having three uncoordinated daughters.
Well, the thing is, I'm going to say this is the truest thing of this family. Like, I was the footballer of my family. Like,
that's true. I'll give that to Alana.
I was so obsessed with football. I won't tell you what my team is because that is not, we're not going there. No.
Oh, please. No, like, is it an English Premier League team?
Trap. No.
You don't, you won't listen. You won't lose fans. You won't lose fans. People aren't that fickle.
I'm not doing it. Essie, the thing that was so annoying about this whole thing with Essie, Essie, how old were you when dad tried to put you into soccer?
Six.
So Essie was six and my dad was like, my daughter is going to play soccer. Like, we have this league called like AYSO, which is like, you don't have to like be good. You just like, I think pay like $20 and then you get put on a team. And Essie, like my dad, I think was like so excited to have like Essie play football. And like her first game, Essie was doing the opposite of what you should do. She was like picking flowers on the field. She was doing like pirouettes. Like the ball was all the way on the other side of the field. She was just like in like talking to the goalie, being like, what's happening? What's going on? Like, let's have a chat. Like, no, it's fine.
Hey, what's your favorite smell?
My dad was mortified, like, oh my gosh, like this is crazy. Like she didn't get the football.
I was such a disappointment.
And then I came along and I always was obsessed with football. And I remember coming to my dad being like, dad, like, I really want to join AYSO. Like, I really want to play. And my dad was like, I learned from Essie, like, you're going to train before you go.
Yes.
And play football. And I trained for like 5 years with my dad trained me for like 5 years before I could join a team that you don't even have to be good. You don't have to have any skills. It's literally
wow.
Like,
that's why your dad's a professional. That's why your dad was a professional footballer. And think of it, if you had kept on going, like, because the states, like the US, are the best women's football team in the world, yes, and they have been for a long time. If you had kept going, you probably could be a World Cup winner at this stage.
I mean, I wasn't that great. I mean, I hope that if I actually continued, I was pretty good. I mean, my dad's position was center mid, and my dad wanted me to be center mid. I loved being defense. That was like my
nobody vibe. Loves defense.
I love defense. Are you kidding me? I'm not a great runner. I have to be honest with you. Like, defense. Chill. You have to be aggressive because you're getting that ball out of there. You have to be aggressive, but you don't have to run that much. But my dad made me be center mid for like, didn't make me, but I was like, okay, I'm gonna be center mid. I tried it for like 4 games, and the amount of running that I had to do, I was like, there's no way. I can't.
Our dad was like, we had to sneak, like, watch it, like MTV Real World was like my
did you guys have that? Did you guys have Real World?
I don't think so. I didn't have, like, you've got like terrestrial TV over here, so it's like BBC 1, 2, Channel 4, and ITV. I grew up with that, so I didn't have like a satellite dish show. I only had like 6 channels or something. Right.
Yeah. So did we. Like, we didn't really have cable until I think I was in high school. And then I basically had a friend that was like, have you been watching The Real World? And I was like, what's that? And I watched the first episode of Real World Hawaii. And it was just a bunch of like 20-year-olds jumping in a pool naked the first day they meet each other. And I
this is OG reality TV.
Exactly.
Yeah. Exactly. When did The Real World start? It started in like
the 90s, in like 91.
Yeah, yeah, we had Big Brother. Like, Big Brother was our OG reality TV.
Big Brother. It's kind of like Big Brother, but it's literally like they put 8 strangers in a house and then just say go.
The thing that's so funny about The Real World, watching it, like when I was watching it, I remember thinking that like all the people on it were like so like they were grown-ups. I was like, oh my god, this is what being a grown-up is like.
So wrong, like.
And I was like, whoa, this is crazy, like. This, like, just watching them, and like now, like, if I was on The Real World now, I'd be like the weird spinster old, like, they'd be like, whoa, you're super old, and I'm 28, and I like still feel like.
Have you ever like contemplated
what Love Island? Oh my god, I've been watching. I mean, like everybody, I've been watching Love Island during quarantine, and the funniest part about like watching Love Island is if I actually went on Love Island, I would be like the oldest person by far on Love Island. Like, everyone's like 20.
Yes,
on that show. I want to be on the island. I want to go on the island, but I have to come to terms with the fact that if I was on the island, I would be like the mother of the house. Like, they'd be like, we look up to you in your old age.
You guys could be such a novelty booking in about like 20 years time, 30 years time, when they'll be like, and we've got 3 sisters coming in at the same time, like into like Big Brother or something. That would be wicked.
I don't know if I could hang.
Yeah, it would be. It, like, you could pay it an absolute fortune. Why did Jackie Stallone went and did Celebrity Big Brother just for the crack? Like, I think she did it for the Benjamins. Like, yeah, like I wrote down so many questions, and we're talking about stuff that's way more fun than anything I've remotely asked about. Yeah, do you know, I like had a question, because like obviously like in like 2012 that drum beat came in. That's like my first memory of your band was like hit and play, and it was, and I can't do it because the drum beat's off beat. It's like doom 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 or whatever it is. It's like the start of forever. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I still can't do it. Like, I was actually sitting here about 2 minutes before we were meant to chat, and I was trying to get it. I was just going, dun, 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 dun. and it was forever. Like, and I was obsessed with that song, and it was the first time I'd ever heard it. And I remember walking around singing it, and I was like, "That's a good sign. Like, this is obviously something that's going to stick." And it was like, "Hey, you, do you remember me?" And I was like, "Right, okay, this is wicked." but obviously, like, you know, there's so much like leading up to that point. Like, you don't know where you've come from beforehand. You're like basically sister aliens that have landed on planet Earth, and this is where you start. But surely, you must have like had so much like hardship getting to that point. There's so much fun, so much like left turns and right turns. I kind of wanted to like know what they were, like what the moments were to get you to that point.
Yeah. I think the biggest surprise for our whole career was that we were being played in the UK before anyone knew who we were in the US. Like, it was a crazy, when we heard we were being played on the radio, we were like,
we were getting like played on XFM. I think Marion Hobbs played us first. We were literally playing to two people in LA, like opening up just for our friends. So we were like, what the fuck? We're getting played on the radio in the UK. Meanwhile, like, we can't get our shit together in the US.
That happens so often though. Like, I mean, it was the same with the Strokes. It was the same with the Killers. I mean, like, American bands do better by breaking here and then going back. It's such weird, fucked up system. Like,
no, it's crazy. Like, I mean, talk about the Strokes. Like, I think one of the biggest breakthroughs of our band was when I got offered to be in Julian's band when he was doing his solo project. And at that point, we had been high. This was in 2010.
Yeah.
So at that point, we had been high for 3 years, again, playing to like three people, like a couple times a month. We'd book gigs and we would just play wherever we could play. We just wanted to play. And didn't have, like, we didn't even know what a manager was, like, didn't have any sort of representation. We were just like literally on MySpace, like asking, like looking for bands, like, can we open for you? You play the Troubadour, or can we open for you when you play the Echo, you know, whatever.
Can you tell me who those acts were that you were like messaging?
I mean, the crazy one was the Remus Lupins, which were like a Harry Potter band, which was crazy because like when we opened up, first of all, we were first of three. We weren't even like right before the Remus Lupins. Like, we were like the opener for the opener of a Harry Potter band. But like the amount of like slutty Hermione
costumes. And it wasn't like they were just called the Remus Lupins and wrote songs about, you know, love, or it was literally songs about Harry Potter.
Wow, that's so nerdy.
People came to the gig in Harry Potter outfits.
Yeah.
And wands.
And we were like, hi, we're Haim. And they were like, what? Like, we had nothing to do with Harry Potter. They were like, what is happening right now?
Is that like a house that I'm not aware of?
The Haim house?
The
Haim
house?
But yeah, and then
Gryffindor? Hi.
Deal, go for it after.
Yeah. And then I think, you know, when I started playing around, I was in this guy, Michael Runyon's band, and he got an offer to open for Jenny Lewis on tour. So I was like, I want to do that. So I hopped in the van and we went on tour with Jenny Lewis. And then I got to know Jenny a little bit. And when it came time for her to tour again, she asked me to actually be in her band. So I was like, sure, great. Quit my job. Like, went on tour with her for a year. And then when Julian was looking for his band, because he was starting his solo project, he had the same manager as Jenny. And he asked me to be part of his band, which was like Jenny Lewis and Julian, like Ryle, Kylie and the Strokes, like for us growing up, like two of our favorite bands.
Yeah, totally.
So after that, I kind of started to, first of all, I toured the world with both of them, and I got to go to the UK for the first time because of Julian. And I think we played Brixton and it was like fucking insane. I remember like just being so excited. And like Julian also was like a Beatle. Like, we would like walk down the street and people would be like, Julian, like freaking out.
Yeah, he's so instantly recognizable. Like, I used to have like a military jacket that he wore in a photo shoot once. Oh, and like, yeah. I had that one.
I had the same one. Yep, I had the same one. But yeah, so like after that, I kind of understood a little bit, like, okay, like we need to get a manager. Like, what are we fucking doing? Like, you know, and I think, and we didn't just like get one, we actually met when we were opening for our friends at the Troubadour, we found our first manager. And then from there, it was super organic. And
sorry, Danielle's dog hates FaceTime.
It's fine. I've got mine here, too.
She actually, sorry. She hates FaceTime. She also loves attention.
She's the Asti dog.
Call her Asti.
But yeah,
I mean, it was 7 years of just grinding in LA, and then until we released that EP, which we didn't fucking know what was going to happen, and then Marion Hobbs like heard it and started playing it on XFM, and we weren't signed, like. It had just kind of all happened from there.
Did you like have that normal thing that happens with so many bands where you go through, like you have like every band's first manager is always like somebody who is like well-meaning or thinks they know what they're doing, and then you have to get rid of them. And then there's like a couple of other people who come in going, yeah, I can help you out. And you're just like clueless and you're like, no, I don't know. That happens a lot. Like, did you guys like just sort of like land on it first time, or how did it go?
I mean, we actually did, the one thing we've always known is we've always like known what we wanted to happen. Like, I feel like we were like very much putting out in the universe, like we want to, you know, travel the world and like be in a band and like.
I almost feel like that thing that you said, Phil, about like bands breaking in America. Breaking in the UK first. I feel like in our mind collectively, like we always wanted to go to the UK first. Because we had heard those stories. And I remember like reading a whole thing about Tom Petty. He also like broke in the UK first.
And
so
Jimmy.
I feel like, huh?
And Jimi Hendrix.
Jimi Hendrix.
Yeah, totally. I mean, we just like over here, there's a real, like impetus on finding and breaking new music. Like it's in the water over here. And like, we loved like finding and sort of nurturing stuff, and then like it goes on to be bigger and then you start again. I don't think you have that in a national capacity in America. Like you've got it in a town.
It's not the same in the US. You can truly feel that like the people in the UK are true music fans.
It's a bunch of nerds.
What?
We're just a bunch of music nerds, but I like it.
I mean, listen, I'm a self-proclaimed music nerd. I'm the same. I have like a crazy thirst for new music and discovering new artists and new bands. And I think that when we got to the UK, that was like mirrored in the people that we were meeting.
Mm.
And it truly felt like, it felt really good and felt like home, really. And I think that's why, you know, we toured so much over there. Because we were having the best time. I mean, and also some of the craziest shows I think we ever played were in the UK.
By far.
I mean, yeah. Dublin went off.
Yeah, it does in Ireland. When did the US start taking you on? Like, how long did, like, after that?
When did the US?
Yeah.
What did you say? Sorry.
When did the US?
We were in the UK for like a year. I feel like we really did stay in the UK for a really long time. And then we like collectively were like, oh, we have nothing going on in the US. Like we're really
well,
like,
also we hadn't signed, like no one wanted to sign us in the US. So we like signed in the UK and nobody wanted to sign us in the US. So we were just like, all right, cool. We're going to stay in the UK.
Stay here. This is great. I could live here. I'm down. I love it. So yeah, I think we were signed in the UK for what, how long before we got signed in the
like
US?
A year.
And then we went back to the US and got signed, but we did like, I mean, we went around the UK, I think like 8 or 9 times before we got signed.
Did you ever freak out thinking going like, this is, are we just going to live in London now? Cause like, this isn't going to happen. Did you ever think that?
I don't want to go home. Honestly, the only thing that was keeping me home was my parents were there. I was like, those are the only two people I care about. Like, I'm down. Yeah. Like, I'll go back to have my mom and dad, but I want to go right back to the UK because it was just so much fun. There was just such an energy. Still, like,
well, and Alana and I were trolling for British boyfriends the whole time, so we were stoked. We were like, we can stay here.
Did that work? Did you pick up?
We found some contenders,
but it was, I mean, right now, I mean, we were actually supposed to be, before quarantine, we were supposed to be in the UK playing shows before quarantine. Like, it honestly breaks my heart that we're not there right now. I wish we could be playing shows over there. But we will be back.
Because like the music industry still to this day is a rampant men's club. I mean, it is, and there's people trying.
Kelly, Are you sure you want to get into this?
Yeah. I wrote my dissertation when I was 21 on the representation of women in the music media. I'm fighting the good fight.
Okay.
Yeah, but okay. I just want to know what like your instances have been with that, or if there has been, because like some people haven't had that, some people have had it really, really bad.
You know, when we were first coming out, it was very much like, you know, first of all, I remember articles, which is so funny now, because what's so great about right now is that there's so many girls playing music and in bands. But like, I remember when we were coming out, like there was this conversation, like rock music is dead or whatever, you know, like rock.
That, yeah, I remember that.
There was like so much shit about like rock music is dead, but like these girls play guitar, you know, and it was like, so I remember being like, this is like a lame headline or whatever, you know. But yeah, I mean, I think it's just so cool right now that there's so many amazing, you know, there's always been, I mean, we grew up loving, like in the 90s, like Liz Phair, you know, like all these alternative girls who fronted bands, Tracy Chapman, like, you know, played guitar. And I think like right now it feels like we're in the middle of kind of this like amazing resurgence, and it's fucking cool. Like, I fucking love Soccer Mommy and Claro. And
I think the thing that we're most excited about in this time, I mean, there was like a Fender came out with like some like a study that they were doing that was saying like 50% of all new guitar buyers are women, which is fucking incredible.
Yeah,
it's sick. And yeah, it's just it's a really exciting time, and there's a lot of really amazing music coming out. And yeah, it's fucking
and
sick.
Also just like just obvious shit of like being able to make something that we like, I always talk about, like, you know, we write a lot on GarageBand, just like the most obvious shit of like being able to make music like on your computer is so amazing. Cause before we had our own like computers with GarageBand on it, we were trying to record music. Was like, you have to go in a studio with engineers you don't know and like try to knock out an EP in like 3 hours that you booked and spent all your money on, just like shit like that, where like just the logistics of making music now, it's like amazing. You can plug in a guitar to your computer and like make a sick sounding song, and like an hour later go into your car and like listen to it, you know, like that, the idea of that is just amazing. And I feel like a lot of newer artists that I talk to, it's like, it's amazing that they know so much about how to create music and produce music on their computers, you know?
And also
like learn how to play guitar from YouTube and stuff like that.
You guys have opened for some of the incredible people like Rihanna and Taylor and Killers and Mumford and Sons. Like what is like, how do you take on, how do you make Mumford and Sons fans your fans? Like how do you switch it up?
The thing is, we were really lucky. I mean, by the time we came, we started actually touring, we had already been playing for 7 years, and we had already been playing to like two people. So like the fact that there was more than two people, we were stoked. I didn't give a fuck if they liked us or wanted to listen to us, or like they were like, we're gonna take this time to go to the bathroom. Like the fact that like two people were more than two people were in the crowd, I was like, I'm on fucking cloud nine. Like, I don't give a shit. I have a half an hour to play music to more than two people. Let's go.
Yeah, I know, we like love opening up for artists. I feel like that's like really, I feel like we still play on our headlining shows, we still play like we're open, like we're like trying to get the audience's attention, you know. I feel like that's it, actually. I think really helped us as live performers. I mean, yeah, we spent years
with our mentality.
Yeah.
Like I've seen
people are coming to see us, we're still like, Are they?
Yeah, I still have 100%. I still have the fear that, like, after the opener plays, that everyone's gonna leave. Like, I still have that fear. I'm like, they're definitely not here for us. So I'm just gonna, like, it's okay if you're only playing to two people. Like, you've done it before and you can do it again.
But you do, like, when I've seen you play live, which is quite a lot of times now, you play with, like, real hunger. Like, anytime, because, like, you're like swapping around and playing, like, drums and all sorts of different things, and you're just, like, there's no resting on a laurel there. Like, you're not, like, going, okay, like, I can just do my bit. It's like, I'm going to fill every single time with, I'm going to do something fucking hard here, I'm going to do this. And it's just like, do you know what I mean? It's just like, I really have to, like, show how good we are, because you're fucking, like, great players.
Thank you.
But I think that's also the time that we have the most fun. We get an hour to do whatever the fuck we want on stage. You know what I mean? Like, there's no rules when we're on stage. We can really do anything, you know.
Well, I will say that when we started this band, we always considered ourselves a live band. Like, before we were, you know, we didn't know how to fucking do anything on record. I feel like I'm swearing so much now because you said I could.
You can.
I know. Now
keep really it going. Bad.
I feel like I'm really just getting out all my fucks because you said I could. No, we always considered ourselves a live band because we really couldn't figure out how to record ourselves. So, like, we were always like, we're a live band. And then when we figured out how to record, we still consider ourselves the live band. That's, like, where touring and being on the road and playing shows live has always been our favorite part of being in a band. Because we never thought we would ever be half to, like, we never thought that it was actually going to, like, happen. We always thought we were going to always just play in LA and not be able to travel the world. Like, we always wanted to, but, like, it was just a kind of like a pipe dream. And so
I'd still be, you know, a hostess at the Cheesecake Factory.
Me and Danielle both worked at clothing stores. Danielle's a shoe girl.
Have you ever been to the Cheesecake Factory?
I haven't, but, like, I may as well have been over, like, I've got a full birthday cake that I got 2 days ago, and it's like, there's one slice left of it, and there's just me and my wife, who, like, weighs like 7 stone, and we've, like, got pretty much eaten a whole lot of it. Like, I haven't eaten an actual dinner in 2 days.
You don't need to when you have cake.
Yeah, I'm just like, I feel like a big pie lord at the minute.
Yeah. Imagine a factory of just that and working.
It's not a fact. It's not, like, actually a fact. It's called the Cheesecake Factory. It's like a restaurant.
It is a factory. There's like a separate kitchen for just the cheesecake. Just cheesecake. Churning out cheesecakes all day, every day. And then there's, like, the restaurant. And, like, working there, you know, I was in my 20s and, you know, bread and soup were free.
But cheesecake wasn't.
And, like the most delicious bread you've probably ever had was free.
Has there ever been, like, a collab that's, like, so big that nearly happened but didn't for whatever reason? Because I always feel that there's so many collabs out there that almost happen and you never hear about them.
I mean, I don't think
there were. I mean, our dream collab was always Prince. Not that that was ever in the book.
That was never in the book.
That was never in the books, but.
I've interviewed Leanna Havas, and she's done stuff with Prince. Like, she was, like, she was a big fan. Yeah,
that would have been a dream.
What, like, I mean,
that would have been a dream.
You played with Stevie Nicks, didn't you?
Essie almost jumped on Prince at the Brits,
had to, like, push down my shoulders. I think it's even on camera. You can, like, see me start to get up, and then Dingarwana literally physically pushing me down.
Essie is by far, like, I mean, I think you are the biggest Prince fan of all time. Like, Essie has tried to talk to Prince so many times.
Wait, Phil, do you know my Prince story about, like, how many times I've tried to meet him and gotten so close?
No, please tell.
Okay, so when Prince was doing, he did, like, how many nights? Like, 25 nights at the Forum.
Yeah, it was like 25 or 21. I don't remember.
Yeah, I forget. But, like, a bunch of nights at the Forum, my sisters and I went to, like, a handful. But we went to the last
one. We went to Temple, but this story was the last one.
The last show on the docket. And in my mind, I was like, okay, this is it. This is my last chance to just get close to Prince. And we had really shitty seats. Tickets were expensive. And we're watching the show. And at the end of the show, Prince basically is like, I need some ladies on stage.
Pick me.
I hear this and I need some Estes on stage. That's literally what I heard. I was like, I need Esty Haim on stage. So I was already standing up. I was so excited.
You know, like in cartoons where like they run really fast and you just see like a pillar of smoke like in the shape of the lobby. Like that was literally Esty. Like I looked, she was next to me, and then I looked back and it was literally just like her shadow in smoke.
It was like Roadrunner.
So, yeah, literally. Exactly. So I like sprint down the stairs with Danielle. Alana was like, I'm not even gonna try.
I notoriously have a really bad poker face. Like it's a running joke in our family that like I notoriously like anytime you're trying to sneak in somewhere or do something that's not supposed to happen, do not bring me. Because I have a really bad poker face.
Yeah. Alana has the look on her face like I'm not supposed to
supposed to be here. Like please escort me out of this
area. Yeah, yeah.
He's not supposed to be here.
So me and Danielle sprint down the stairs. We were literally in the nosebleeds of the forum. Sprint down. I mean, I think what Prince meant was like the people that have floor seats, please come on stage.
Yeah.
We were not those people. So we sprint down. There's a guard. And I literally like people were trying to get to the floor. I literally, Danielle and I swing from the gate onto the floor. So we bypass the guard. Great.
Incredible.
Then we get to the velvet ropes of the people that had spent a lot of money to be there. And we're there. Me and Danielle are there. And I'm like, he's like, I can see him like bringing people on stage or whatever. And I'm like, Esty, this is your moment. It's now or never. And Danielle stays back and is just dancing to, I think it was like 1999 was playing. So Danielle's just like standing back and I'm like, fuck this. I don't want to just be down here.
I see Esty like trying to figure out how to get on stage. Like I see her trying to figure it out. I see her literally put a hand on the stage.
Yeah.
And there's like a table, like a chair and a table, and she puts her foot on the, like, she's trying to hoist herself up onto the fucking stage. And I'm like, you know what? I know when to quit. I'm just going to be in this, like, really, in this amazing spot. No one's asking me for my tickets. It's like, I'm around a bunch of people that probably spent, like, thousands of dollars to just be, like, at the stage. I know when to quit. Esty, go for it. Literally, I see Esty try to holster her up on stage. I see, like, 10 security guards approaching her.
By the way, on another note, I have a bird's eye view of everything.
That must be amazing.
I'm watching everything happen from like the nosebleed seats. I'm like watching Danielle, like they both like they're all the things that Esty said. I am watching this from the nosebleeds, like being like, oh my gosh, what's happening? I see the 10 guards coming to take Esty, and I'm like, it's like watching a horror movie. I'm like, oh my god, guards, she's not gonna make it.
Literally, I see a guard literally push Esty's head off the stage. Esty like literally falls into like four other security guards. Everyone in my section's like, ooh, everyone's like, oh no, like seeing my sister like being literally taken away.
Oh my god.
And everyone's looking at me like, oh my gosh, I wonder who is that girl? Person? Woman's okay. And I'm like, I don't know. But I'm gonna stay here.
She's such a psycho, isn't she?
What a crazy bitch.
I was like, I don't know who that is. But I'm and I stayed.
Danielle stayed. I'm like walking, they're like holding me and like escorting me out. I'm like looking at Danielle, like, please help me. And Danielle, I literally see Danielle and her hands are just in the air, like having the best time.
I don't care.
I tried to, like, she was having the time of her life as I'm being escorted out of the Prince concert. And I'm trying to barter my insulin pump as like collateral to stay in the show, like to stay in the forum. Like, I'll give you my insulin pump, like my lifeline, the thing that like keeps me alive.
That's,
you weren't happy.
Do you feel a strange affinity for people who get thrown out of your shows now because of that?
Oh, people that can like sneak in and shit?
Like, I'm sure there's people who try to get on the stage or try and get over the barriers or try and grab something off the stage.
I haven't really had that problem. I mean, no one's ever really tried to do that. And anything like, the thing that makes me so happy is people throw Percy Pigs at me because that's my favorite candy of all time. I'm obsessed with Percy Pigs and I haven't had a Percy Pig in like 2 years now. We haven't like been back. But yeah, like,
you know, like our history of like sneaking into Coachella, right?
No. I don't know anything.
It's a long ass story. It's so long.
I'll give you the Cliff's Notes. We literally counterfeited. We've had friends that like, if friends had like all access passes to Coachella, I would sneak them out. I would sneak out the passes like 3 or 4 days before Coachella. I'd go to Kinko's and copy them. And then put them on my wrist and sneak into Coachella. We did that for like 7 years.
That's just genius. Like, if you're going to go to that level to get in to the concert, then like you deserve to get in.
Thank you.
I've seen people jump over the fence at festivals in Ireland dressed as Spider-Man getting chased by dogs and like,
that's genius.
Yeah, like, so they can't see their face. So like, he's dressed as Spider-Man. Runs around the campsite a couple of times and hides in a tent and then just takes takes off the Spider-Man outfit and then voila.
We had friends that there's like a notorious pizza stand at Coachella called Spicy Pie. And he basically found a Spicy Pie shirt at a thrift store. Got a bunch of empty pizza boxes. Put on the t-shirt and was like, I have a delivery.
Yeah, that's...
Like, I gotta get in there.
It's swamps.
That's...
And they're like, yeah, go in, get in there. Go deliver the pie.
Like, dropped off the boxes, took off a shirt, and he was like in Coachella.
That's a classic. I've heard that one. Like, there's a place in Belfast that's just it's just closed down. And there's a kitchen in it, but it's also like a huge venue, the Mandela Hall. And yeah, you probably played there along on your travels. A friend of mine used to like wear, you know, those like checkered trousers that you would get if you were a chef. Like, it would be a chef's hat, checkered trousers, and he would wear those over his trousers, and he would get like two big cartons of milk in both hands, and he would just just walk up and walk in. He would just be to the bouncers, just like going, sorry, I need to get these to the kitchen. He would go upstairs. Order a vodka, pour the milk into a little bit of a vodka and Kahlua and have himself a little White Russian.
Like a White Russian? Yeah. The thing is, like, if you look like you know where you're going and you have a purpose, no one is going to stop you.
No.
I mean, I'm not condoning getting arrested and, like, trying to sneak into shows, but we have done that a lot of times. I feel like now it's actually a lot harder to do it. Like, this was like when we were like in high school. I feel like now, because like there's like passes with like computers attached to it and shit. Like, Coachella is like,
you can't do that anymore.
You can't do it anymore. It's way harder. But if you can figure it out, I'm down.
Guys, thank you so much. I can't wait to see you again in the flesh when you're over in the UK.
I know, we missed you.
And
we missed you.
Yeah, I just want to can't wait to come see you live. I'll get a ticket. It's fine. but like, listen, enjoy yourselves, stay safe, and thank you so much for coming on the podcast.
Thank you for having us, Phil.
Thanks, Phil.
Oh yeah, look. Yeah, exactly. I've got some sound effects. It's got to happen. Guys, thank you so much. I appreciate that, and yeah, enjoy the rest of your day.
You too.
Oh, yeah.
Bye,
thanks,
Bill.
Bye.
Bye.
Bye. Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.